Today's daf in Mesechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh, is daf Yud Tet. We're holding on daf Yud Tet, Amud Beit. And once again, let's just briefly recall where we are, because we've gotten deeply, deeply into a new world. So we started off with the question of Bir Chametz, and that Bir Chametz led to a danafkamina between Truma and Chulin, B'sha'ah Chamishit, at least according to one approach in the Mishnah. And that led us to wonder what would be the din if we're already going to be makbid on eating Truma B'sha'ah Chamishit in order not to burn it. Why do we burn it B'sha'ah Shishit, where it's only Aser Midrabbana? And after all, there should be at least the din of Mishmeret, which led us into the question of whether the din of Mishmeret applies at all in cases where there's already an Iser Derabbanan. And then that brought us to wonder, would there be a din of Mishmeret on something that is only a Truma Midrabbanan? And that led to understanding how Rabbi Meir learned out from Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohanim that it would be mutter to be Serif Truma that was Tameya, even though it was only Tameya Midrabbanan, together with Truma Diraisa, which is the way that we had understood it. And that led to the deeper question of why Rabbi Yossi held it was Eina Mina Mida. If we were talking about a Vlada Truma, a Vlada Tuma that was only Derabbanan. And because of that, we got into the fundamental machlokas about what the din is of mashkin, because we understood that the case was referring to mashkin to me in contacting this truma. So according to Rabbi Yossi, we said, since mashkin is betame ochel, that would make it into a diaraisa, which is why Rabbi Yossi said, look, I mean, you can't bring a raya from Chaninus Gan HaKohanim to a case of the sixth hour where the Yisr is only Drabonon. You could bring a raya to the seventh hour. That's how Rabbi Yochanan understood it, which would mean that there is no fundamental difference anymore, according to Rabbi Yossi, between Iser and Tuma, Tuma in terms of the Truma. And in fact, there would be no din of Mishmeret wherever we have reason to say, look, you're not going to be able to eat this anyway. So therefore, we understand Mitzad Asfara that there's no din of Mishmeret. And that led to a deeper understanding of the different shitas of the dinim of Tuma B'mashkin, because if we were going to be Mekayim, this Machloket, we had to understand on what it was based. Now, the way that we had assumed that the Machlokas was going is we took for granted that the Braisa that presents the different Shitas of Mashkin really is correct, and it's really what Rabbi Yossi holds, even though it turns out later that maybe Rabbi Yossi was only saying it, I'll leave it to Rabbi Akiva. But in any event, we had four shitas. So we had one sheet of Rabbi Elazar Mashkin, or not even Mekabel Tumas Atzma. We had the sheet of Rabbi Meir that the Mekabel Tumas Atzma, but they cannot be Matami anything else, even Eichlin. Then we had the time, the Svar of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, according to which Mashkin are Matamim Eichlin, and obviously Tami themselves, but they're not Matami other Mashkin, and they're not Matami Kalim. We had the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda that they were even Matami Kalim, for which subsequently we discovered that Rabbi Yehuda had Charata, no longer holds that it would be Matami Kalim, and there was a question of whether he had Charata and even decided that the halach is like Rabbi Meir. Then we started going into the basis of all of that, and where exactly would it come from? So that led us to where we are today, because we are in the middle of an analysis of where it is from the Torah that we're getting all of these ideas from. And at last, we're trying to penetrate into the fundamental mikeres of the dinam of Tuma on all kinds of things. And we've already seen that we've got a couple of different issues that we have to understand. One is, why did the Torah have a separate posik to teach about the sheretz, that is, neifel on a piece of food, where over there it says tamehu, which means only it is tameh, but it can't be metameh further. Then we had a separate posik. It was talking about a sheretz that fell into a kli cheres, recall asher betocho yitma. And over there, the pasuk goes out of its way to say two separate yitmas. One is mikol ochel asher yeachel, yitma, and one is mikol hamashka asher yishateh b'chol kli, yitma. Now, it turns out that an analysis of that pasuk led us to a curious understanding that we needed to make a compromise in how to read the word yitma between saying that something was tameh, which if that's all it wanted to say, it would have simply said in the pasuk tameh. Wouldn't have said yitma. If it says yitma, then it's a reference to the object as well. Tame just means tame. Yitma means it is tame, right? So there's a reference to the object. What's more, if we want to talk about the object per se, then it's a little bit ridiculous. And obviously, we're talking about the object. Why do we have to re-mention the object in determining the tumah, correct? So that meant that yitma has got to also be understood as yitame, because otherwise it doesn't make sense to use that funny word. On the other hand, if the Torah really meant yitame, then just say so, darn it. I mean, what's the point? And I mean, if it would mean it could be matame anything, so then why don't we just put the two parts together? Mikola ochel asher yachel, mikola mashka, asher yishateh b'chokli yitma. So we came up with a brilliant understanding of what that means. It means the object, but not the object per se, which would have meant that we could have used the word tame, because I don't need to re-mention the object, but it meant the class of objects, which is absolutely stunning understanding, according to which the separate yitmas are now obviously necessary. Because if you're talking about mikola ochel, then yitma would mean that ochlin will not be matame further anything of that class, namely other ochlin. Because otherwise, why stress the object? And why not just say tame? Because I want to also say that it can, however, yitame. In which case, the yitame would mean it can be mitame the mashkin. The same thing is true in the inverse in the mashkin. The yitma means the object, that is to say, in this case, the mashkin. The mashkin will only themselves be tame, not yitame. And as far as it doesn't mean it can't be matame at all, because then it would have said tame. So instead it says it will be matame other things. If it says it will be matame other things, then the meaning of the yitma in the object is again the class of objects, which therefore means that mashkin cannot be matame other mashkin, because it's only yitma, but mashkin can be matame ochli. So now we understand ochlin matame mashkin, mashkin matame ochlin, but not other mashkin. And we learned out from a kal vachomer that they cannot be matame kalim. And we were basically sort of satisfied with that until we realized that we ran into some serious problems. The problems that we ran into yesterday was that Rabbi Akiva makes an obvious diuk from that yitma yitame, because he says, look, if it's saying that it will cause tumah, okay, what level of tumah are we talking about that it will cause? I mean, it's got to be talking about to be matame anything at all, because the Torah was specifically not talking about truma, kochim. It just said in general, kol ha'ocha, right? So then if that's the case, if you analyze the situation, kli becomes tame from sheretz, which makes it a rishon. It is metame, the mashkin in it, which makes it a sheni. The mashkin are yitma, which means yitame, which means they make a shlishi. And that would be a shlishi even b'chulin, not necessarily b'kodesh. And that leads us to a big problem, because we know they're all over. Rabbi Yossi is very clear about the fact, and we thought we were too, that there is no such thing as chulin b'mekabel tuma on any level. Even as a psul, where would it be nogea? Psul by chulin, after all. Well, it would be nogea, let's say, by meiser sheni. So over there, as we're going to see, we learn out from the pasuk, there are three dargas in tahara, which we'll discuss in a moment. But in any event, once we would know that yitma is meant to be understood as yitame, then it ought to follow that there was such a thing as a shlishi b'chulin. That's what Rabbi Akiva indeed suggests. If there is such a thing as a shlishi b'chulin, then that ought to mean, as we're going to see today, that there would be a revi'i that would be posel by truma, and in turn that would mean, and we're going to see why this is true, why we learn each one out from the other, in turn that would mean that there's a chamishi b'kodesh. Well, Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold that. We know for sure he doesn't hold that. And therefore, he must not actually be Doresh the way we were just Doresh, that Mashkin or Metame Acherim Diraisa. So the last thing we learned yesterday was, well, it doesn't say that Rabbi Yossi personally holds that. What Rish Lakish was pointing out was that Rabbi Yossi made the statement that Rabbi Shimon and he hold that mashkin or matamim only ochlin, but not kalim, and not just that they're only tame themselves. He said that according to the shita of Rabbi Akiva Rabba. But he himself doesn't buy into that shita, and obviously is not dorish the lashon of yitma to mean yitame, because that would have led him to need to say that there was a revi b'truma and a chamishi b'kodesh. That's what we were holding. Now, what that also enabled us to do was to begin an examination of where do we know the other halachas that we've been taking for granted. Where do we know this din of psul? Where do we know this din of the differences between a psul of shlishi and a psul of revi in truma and hegdish, respectively? And to once again review, which we'll be doing later, to once again review, how do we know that a klicheres is metame bitocho, and not because it's mole tuma, but because of the fact that the tuma has basically irradiated the kli itself, and now the kli has to be metame something else. We know that because we talked about it, and it's simply because of the fact that a kli inside of a klicheres into which a sheretz fell is not mekabel tuma, even if it's a kli shetef, which is like a metal kli, and it ought to be mekabel tuma from the outside. The Torah says it's not, only mikol ha'ochel asher ye'achel mikol ha'mashkeh. So obviously, it cannot be that we view the inside of a klicheres the equivalent of the inside of a house with a mace. Okay. Now, in the course of all of this, it turns out that today, Erev Chanukah, is extremely important because we just had the sugya of the test that Chagai was giving to the Kohanim. But that test took place on the 24th of Kislev, and that was today, and that was because, as Chagai himself announces, come tomorrow, everything changes, buddy. So you better get your halacha straight today, okay? So that's a good introduction today to make sure that we have all of the questions and understanding of the Mifchan. And that takes into consideration some of the issues today, and we'll start today, therefore, on Daf Yod Ches Amud Beis to review how we know that it cannot be that Rabbi Yossi actually buys into the limud of Rabbi Akiva that Yitma is to be read Yitame. So Rav Ashi said to Rav Kana, look, I mean, you're saying that Rabbi Akiva doesn't hold of Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold of Rabbi Akiva. So I understand on my own how I know that Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold of Rabbi Akiva. That's where we're up to. So Omerle Rav Ashi Rav Kana, six lines up. Now, Bishlem Rabbi Yossi lo sarvalak Rabbi Akiva. I know that myself, Titania, Omer Rabbi Yossi. Minayil Ravi bekodeshu pasul. Now, let's understand what all of that is based on, all right? We've got a pasuk that says, Ubo Hashemesh v'tahar v'achar yochal min hakodashim. So we have a very interesting situation. Somebody becomes tummy, goes to the mikveh, then the pasuk says that there are different stages. What are the different stages? So one is he went to the mikveh. Okay, what happens when he went to the mikveh? How did that impact him? I mean, obviously, when it says v'achar yochal min hakodashim, there were previous stages of taira before he needed to worry about kodashim, right? Because, I mean, is he tar or tame as far as touching chulin would be concerned? Or perhaps the way that the Gemara puts in the Yavamis is taval the Allah. The moment that a guy comes out of the mikveh, he is immediately allowed to eat meiser, which has a level of kedusha, and he has no level of tuma on him other than when it comes to achilas kachim. When the sun sets, then harif shimsho, then he's ochel b'truma. Now, we know that from the first Mishnah in Shas. That was the time of Kriyat Shema, Misha'a shakohanim nichnasim lecho b'truma tam. So that was the stage of harif shemesh. Now, if you think that mina kodashim means that you can eat kachim and not truma, you'd be very wrong. Why? Because when it comes to any of the Mechusar Kippurim, so let's say the Pasuk by the Yoledes, which it says, V'chiper alea hakohen v'tahera. What is that supposed to mean? That means on the 81st day or the 41st day, in the case of female-male birth, respectively, that after the Kohen brings a carbon for her, as stated in the Pasuk, then and only then v'tahera. Now, Whoa, I'm confused. Didn't you say V'achar yochal min ha-kodashim? So now what that means is that we've got three levels of taira. One is aliyah min ha-mikveh, which still leaves the person in a state of tfu'un yom vis-a-vis the first level of kachim, which is truma, which the Torah calls kodesh. And then we have the mechusar kippurim in those cases where you have tuma yotzi migufo, and it's also, there's the din of needing to bring a korban. So in all of those cases, where you have a zov and a zava and a yoledes and so on, mitzora, those cases require one additional stage, which is the bringing of a korban in order to be able to eat real kachet, that is to say, kodesh, kachet shamai, already. So then we now know that there are three stages of tahira, and they affect different levels of things. Now, that's already a mind-boggling issue because it means that the sensitivity to tuma varies between chulin and meiser, truma and kodesh. And that sensitivity is defined by a level of tuma, which we call someone who is a tful yom, someone who is post-tful yom, so he's called heriv shimsho, and someone who is called a mechusar kippurim. So as long as he's still a tful yom, he's aser betruma. As long as he's still a mechusar kippurim, he means, of course, he or she, is going to be asura in achilas kachim. That leads us to the following. The Tanya Omar Rabbi Yossi. The fact is that Rabbi Yossi can only work out, how do we know that there is such a thing as a revi'i b'kodesh, which is possible? Well, I say, says Rabbi Yossi, it's a kal v'chomer. Consider the fact that a mechusar kippurim, as I just explained to you, is mutar b'truma, correct? Nonetheless, the Torah says this person, achar yochal min ha-kodashim, only after bringing the korban can eat kodesh. But up until that time, this individual is posel for achilas kodesh. Now, if we have defined a sensitivity of kodesh to someone who is mechusar kippurim, and that mechusar kippurim, when he's in touch with truma, there is zero sensitivity. What does that teach you, man? Well, it teaches you like this. If the mechusar kippurim, to whom the truma is completely insensitive, nonetheless is considered to be on a darga of tuma that affects kodesh, so then a shlishi, which is pasul b'truma, is it not obvious that that shlishi will be able to make a revi'i b'kodesh? Now, of course, you'll say, now, hold on. Garbage in, garbage out. You just violated dio. Because you can't learn more than what you put in. What you put in was a maximum of shlishi. How in the world did you get out of that shlishi a revi'i where you needed to be semech on the darga of shlishi as your proof? Isn't that a problem? It is not, continues the Gemara. You know why? Because lomadnu l'shlishi b'kodesh min ha-Torah. There is no problem of dayo lavo min ha-din if there is no other meaning to the kal v'chomer. So where the Torah teaches you a brand new halacha, such as over here, oh my gosh, we now know three levels of sensitivity. We understand that the implication is that there must be, therefore, some additional level of sensitivity that we can learn out from kachim from the aforementioned lower levels. Well, why is the Torah providing that data? Because we're meant to conclude something from it. And don't try to tell me, okay, but maximal is shlishi. No, because shlishi I already know beferish. We'll look in a moment how I know it. But shlishi, I already know beferish. That would mean that the kal v'chomer only is serving one function, and the Torah would have no need of teaching us this if it wouldn't be that we had a right to take it further and to conclude its implications. Its implications are that the same way that the mechusar kippurim is a new level of sensitivity to kodesh, so too is the revi'i b'kodesh a new level of sensitivity that it can be mekabel from a shlishi. Okay. And I say shlishi min ha-Torah, because it says Vabasar Asher Yiga Bechol Tamei Lo Yeachel. When it comes to Kodesh, do I know Shlishi? Oh, I sure do. Because since the Torah said anything that touches, this, remember, was the question that was supposed to stump Rav Papa when the new boy came into the yeshiva, right? So doesn't it say if Basar Kodesh touches anything at all which is Tame, then it cannot be eaten. It's ruined. Okay, what is the Kol Tame? Well, we know that. It says Beferish Yitma in the Torah. And what was that? That was a Sheni. Sheretz touches Kli, Rishon. The Kli touches, doesn't touch, I mean, we're talking about airspace, but pretend it's touch. The Kli touches food. What's that? Well, that would be a Sheni, okay? And it says that thing is Yitma. And therefore, Bechol Tamei would mean if you touch a Sheni, you've ruined the Kodesh. So now I know Shlishi, right? I don't need your Kal V'Chomer to teach me Shlishi. Therefore, the Kal V'Chomer adds Revi, because Milo Askinet and Naga B'Sheni, as we saw in the Pasuk. And that leaves us with an open Kal V'Chomer, which has no other application other than to teach us Revi B'Kodesh. Now, here's my proof. And this is what I understood is the reason that you were claiming that there's no way that Rabbi Yossi can learn like Rabbi Akiva. And that's simply because if, in fact, he would have held like Rabbi Akiva, then this whole thing has to go one additional step, right? Because according to Rabbi Akiva, Yitma would mean Yitame, which taught us that there's such a thing already as a Shlishi Bechulin. Once I would know there was a Shlishi Bechulin, then I would have known already from the Pasuk that there wasn't a Shlishi Bekodesh, there was a Revi Bekodesh. Once I would know there's a Revi, then the Kal V'Chomer would have led us to say the Chamishi, because we would learn from the additional, we learn the Revi Betruma, and that would bring us one additional step to be a Chamishi Bekodesh. So therefore, Yisal Kadaitach Sovak Rabbi Akiva, why wouldn't he have added Revi Betruma and Chamishi Bekodesh, because each one would have been brought down one additional step because of the fact that the first Pasuk of Yitma, according to Rabbi Akiva, read Yitameh, added a Shlishi already Bechulin. And then we have the same Kal V'Chomer, that the Gemara doesn't bother speaking about over here, but the same Kal V'Chomer for Tful Yom would be to tell me one additional step for Truma. And once I knew that, the Kal V'Chomer from Mechusa Kippurim would tell us yet one more additional step for Kodesh, which would bring us Yitma Yitame is Shlishi Bechulin. The first level of the Chiddush of Tful Yom, which is V'Acher Yochal Min HaKodeshim, referring to Truma, would bring us to the sensitivity of Revi B'Truma. And then we would have the Kal V'Chomer from Mechusa Kippurim to teach me the idea of Chamishi. And therefore, it cannot be that Rabbi Yossi would have held like Rabbi Akiva, because then he would have used exactly this Kal V'Chomer and would have said, so we have learned Revi Betruma and Chamishi Bekodesh and Shlishi Min HaTorah the way my Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, learned it. And he does not say that. QED. So that I understand, but I do not understand how you know that Rabbi Akiva doesn't hold of Rabbi Yossi. Meaning what? He doesn't hold of these Kal V'Chomers. Why? Well, obviously, the same way that we know that Rabbi Yossi didn't hold of Rabbi Akiva. Namely, that if he would have, then the levels would have been 3, 4, 5 for Chulin, Truma, Kodesh. Then Rabbi Akiva, who undoubtedly does hold of Rabbi Akiva, should be holding 3, 4, 5. But he doesn't. How do you know? That's the question. That's what I'm asking you. How do we know that Rabbi Akiva doesn't hold of Rabbi Yossi? Amar Leih, look, I mean, you don't think that if Rabbi Akiva held of Rabbi Yossi, that somewhere, sometime, there would be somebody who mentioned that there's such a thing as 3, 4, 5, and then everybody would say, whoever held that? Rabbi Akiva. Did you ever hear such a thing? No. So, I mean, Lolishtame Tana, in somewhere in Shas, and once, like, let it slip, the big secret, that there's a Revi B'Truma V'Chamishi B'Kodesh, and then everybody would start shouting, he would say, what do you mean? This is Rabbi Akiva, right? That's your proof? What, we don't ever find it? So that's a proof that it doesn't exist? This you call a proof? Oh, my God. Try presenting that at the conference. No. That's what we're going to rely on. Now, so Rav Ashi said, okay, I'm going to go out and find the proof, not the dearth of a proof. So here's my proof. So Nafak Rav Ashi, some say it was Rav Kahana, and he was Medayik, and he, sure enough, he found an actual proof. And it goes like this, the Tanakh. So we have this idea in Chagiga of a concept of Tziruv Kli. Okay, now today we're going to be getting into some new inyanim. It's amazing how each one of these issues leads us to yet more issues till we get to the real bottom of things over here. And that is, remember that until now we had this concept of Kol HaOchel Asher Ye'achel, but it's something that needs Mashke Alav. And that's the difference between Mashkin that don't need Mashkin and Ochel that do need Mashkin. Well, it turns out that there's another entire area of objects that could be Mekabel Tuma. And those objects are called Chibat HaKodesh. Because the way that we understand the concept of Mehechsher, to be Mekabel Tuma, is that a foodstuff is only considered to be valuable and set aside as a real food when it's been washed off. So once a person handles this food in water or he wants it to be pushed into water, at that point it becomes food. If that's the case, then it would mean any other thing that makes that food chashev is also the equivalent of Hechsher. Now, this is a concept, midrabanan, and obviously we can't create a whole new class of objects that are going to be Mekabel Tuma. But it would tell us that at least midrabanan, there's a new idea of chiba. That is to say, it's valuable in my eyes that are akshvei. Since things of kodesh are very valuable in my eyes, and I take good care of them, because of that, they are would be Mekabel Tuma because they are called food. Even if they're not food. So could the keteres be Mekabel Tuma? I mean, you can't eat it, but yes, it would be Mekabel Tuma. How about the burnt out coals on the Mizbeach? Would they be Mekabel Tuma? Yep, they would be Mekabel Tuma. Listen, I collect those coals. It's part of the Avod in the Beis HaMikdash. I make a matana of it in the Truma in every morning of the burnt off coals of the Mizbeach. So all of those things will also be Mekabel Tuma. Now, there's one additional issue that we never thought about. Up until now, we spoke about a transference of Tuma between different objects with an attenuation that's associated with each level of transference. Is it possible to be metame a bunch of things together because of the fact that they're held together in a container? Or does it have to go from piece to piece? Let's imagine a situation where we've got a long tray, and there's a piece of meat on one side of the tray and another piece of meat on the other side of the tray. If somebody would touch one of those pieces, would the other piece be tame or not? Now, it turns out that when it comes to Kodesh, we have a concept of Tziruv Kli. The mocker in the Torah for this is, of course, also Chanukah. I mean, if we're talking about Chagai, then we better understand all of the issues of Chagai, right? And that was the Kriya Satera on Chanukah, which is the gift of the Nisiyan. The gift of the Nisiyan, it says, Kaf Achat Milea Kitoret. I mean, why does it have to say Kaf Achat every single time? All it needs to say is Kaf Milea Kitoret, right? So Kaf Achat, we understand, means that Kaf makes everything one. All right. So this is now a new din of Tziruv. We'll see what that rem is, whether how it translates the Raisa to Rabbanan and so on. That's already a big sugya and big machlokas here in the sugya here and in Chagiga. But in any event, I say that here is where we can start bringing a raya that Rabbi Akiva, a real raya. I want a raya. I don't want just not knowing, but I want to know. So he says like this. The Mishnah says in Chagiga, so when it comes to foods of Kodesh, even if you got one piece of meat on one side, another piece of meat on the other side, if you touch one, the other one will be tame. And of course, the other implication of this is that where you have something that is made out of granules, right? So you've got flour, let's say. If you touch a little bit of flour, are you going to be tame all of the flour? Well, granule one will touch granule two, and then what? And then what? When you get to 10,000th granule, you're going to have aseret alafim litruma. We only have two stages for truma, or three, or maximum of four. I mean, how in the world could you be metame flour? Well, there is a way we know of, right? You can put it into a kli cheres, and the kli cheres will be metame kol masha betocho. I understand, because it doesn't have to come into contact with anything, because it's the airspace that's metame. Something would be true about tomei meis. But generally speaking, with tumas maga, you'd have a tough time. However, when it comes to kodesh, if you touch a little bit of that flour, everything in the kli is going to be tummy. But that's only for kodesh and not for truma. This is one of the milas. It's called a mala bekodesh. Another mila is that a ravi bekodesh is possible, and the shlishi is possible, but not a ravi when it comes to truma, which is another mala bekodesh. Okay, so far, this has nothing to do with our sugya. Ah, but here's where it gets interesting. The Amrav Chiya Bar Rava, Amrav Yochanan, this is all based on Rabbi Akiva. Aha. Now is where we can start understanding the implications for Rabbi Akiva Shita. So since we have in the Mishnah of Idiot that Hosif Rabbi Akiva Hasolet Vahaktoret Vahalavona Vagechalim, Rabbi Akiva adds in this Mishnah to the list of things that will become Tameh even if only a little part of them was touched. So these are all granulated objects. That the deal is, I'm telling you, not only is the Kli Metzarf Masha Betocho what you were talking about, but here even things that are not even edible, Im Nagatvu Yom B'Mikzatan Pasal Et Kulam. So it must be that that is because the Kli is Metzarf Masha Betocho. Otherwise, the Tfuyom obviously could not do more than be Metame, the tiny little particles that he touches. Now, normally, of course, things that are not Roy for Achila are not considered to be Tame. So Rabbi Akiva is now adding over here the concept of Chibat HaKodesh. The Chibat HaKodesh is Machshavtam. It makes it more Choshev, and it turns it into a actual food, the equivalent of a foodstuff. Now note, now here's what's important to us. If this Mishnah, and the Mishnah says, Revi Bekodesh and Shlishi Betruma, if this Mishnah was based on Rabbi Akiva's Eidus, then why doesn't it say, ha-ha, it should have said, HaRevi Betruma is Pasul and HaChamishi Bekodesh. Ah, so obviously, Rabbi Akiva does not buy into Rabbi Yossi's Kavachomer, because if he did, then the Mishnah in Chagiga that's based on the Eidus and Idios of Rabbi Akiva would have had to reflect the din of Revi, Betruma, and Chamishi, Bekodesh. There you go. Now that's what I call a raya. Ha! So, why though, by the way? I mean, it was so beautiful. The Yitma Yitameh, the consistency, together with the Kavachomer. So it turns out that the Gemara itself discusses the fascinating fact that there will be a future generation who is going to attack our ideas of Revi or Shlishi in terms of Psul. And how will they attack it? Because they will attack the Kavachom River of Yossi. And what they will say is the following. How can you bring a raya from a Tvul Yom and a Mechusar Kippurim to the sensitivity of Kodesh and Truma to its Revi'i or Shlishi? Remember, there's a completely different concept when it comes to a Tvul Yom and a Mechusar Kippurim. It's all very sweet for you to start talking about attenuated Tuma, but not all attenuated Tumas are necessarily the same, are they? I mean, a tumah that never was an avatumah but came into contact 3 steps later from something that had touched an avatumah. Is that, in your mind, exactly the same thing as something that was an avatumah and then went to the mikvah and just hasn't had a chance for the sun to set? Don't you understand that something which is an avatumah, it's just that the tefillah attenuated the power of that avatumah, it's still an avatumah. Now, we already made that distinction, remember, when we spoke about the idea of Mashkin or Oakland not being able to be a Rishon, not being able to be an Av, that nonetheless, there was a difference between the levels of Tumah that it can give off, even though it's not an Av, to be Metame, Odom, Vekalim. So we understand that the concept of Av has many different elements to it. How do you know that a Tfu Yom and a Mechusar Kippurim, who are both Avot HaTumah, we're talking about over here a Zov. The guy is a Zov. Don't change the, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. It's just he is a Zov who went to the mikveh. That's not the same thing as being three steps removed from Zivas, is it? So that completely undermines the entire logic of what it was that Rabbi Yossi was trying to prove from the Kal v'chomer v'tvul yom ha'mechutz l'Kippurim. Basically, according to the Dor Acharon, you're mixing metaphors and you're having a very simplistic reading of levels of truma versus the type of intensity of truma, and it's not the same. So it may well be that Rabbi Akiva would buy into the Dor Acharon. Fascinating. By the way, I just want to point out to you that once you are ready to go and to accept the Kal v'chomer of Rabbi Yossi, let's try to reinsert that din back into the psukim of Yitma Yitame. Because, look, to say that he doesn't hold of Rabbi Akiva in any way, the drasha is a beautiful drasha. I mean, what do we do with the fact that the Torah did not say Tame and the Torah did not say Yitame? So let's understand that what we were doing with that pasuk was we were making the assumption that there is a difference, and that difference is the full marker of what we can understand. Like the Gemara said, look, there's nothing else we can apply it to. So if there's nothing else we can apply it to, what are we going to do? But suppose we have now other information. Our other information comes from the difference of Tvul Yom and Mechutz l'Kippurim to Truma and Kodshim. Can't we turn around and go back and to say, you, Rabbi Akiva, darshan yitma yitame. You know what? I agree to that. But I don't think that it should be applied simplistically. You're saying, well, just because the pasuk didn't make a distinction between what type of ochel must be that there's a shlishi b'chulin. I don't think that follows. Because since we have additional data, which comes from our understanding of the difference of the levels of Tuma that are following tefillah in the mikveh in the day, sunset at night, Mechutz l'Kippurim, whatever days later, depending on the case, I want to reinsert that data now into your understanding of the pasuk. And I say, look, it's very true. It's an ingenious point that you've made. And Yitameh is obviously implied by Yitma, but where? Not b'chulin. Once we understand this difference, I understand that the pasuk is being merames to these different dargas 100%. So I'm not throwing out your pasuk completely over here. This would explain why it is that Rabbi Yossi was so adamant about bringing out the shitas Rabbi Akiva Rabo when he was talking about the Yitma Yitameh. It's just that he can't buy into it completely because he needs this additional factors that we brought up today. Okay, so now we have spoken about Mashkin, Ochlin. We're still not 100% sure we understand the interrelationship of Kalim, which we're going to be getting, and we don't understand what Rabbi Akiva meant because we don't know about Chibas HaKodesh yet, and Rabbi Akiva talked about Siruf for Chibas HaKodesh. Now, it must mean that if Rabbi Akiva put these dinim together, note that he mixed the dinim of Siruf together with the dinim of Chibas HaKodesh, because he mentioned that Siruf in conjunction with the Keteres and the Gicholim and so on, which are only considered to be Kabbal Tumah because of Chibas HaKodesh, which is a Drabbanan. And since the din of Siruf is being put together with that, then that means that he holds that the din of Siruf is also a Takana Drabbanan, in which case, Pliga de Rabbi Chanin. So we now have to say that he disagrees with the Makor in the Torah for Tziruf, because Rav Chanin brought Tziruf from a Diyaraisa Shenemar Kaf Achat Asra Zavalei Ketoret, which means HaKatuv Asa Koma Shebekaf Achat. Anything that is in there is clearly going to be all one thing. And that is the Ketoret. Specifically, all of this was taught in terms of the Kodesh. Okay. So now, let's take a look at also another issue that had to do with Rav Chanina Skana Kohanim, which is also brought in Idios and is the continuation of the Edos of Chanina, Rav Chanina Skana Kohanim, and which relates to our sugya. Because what Rav Chanina Skana Kohanim also said, besides the thing that we started off with that got us into this whole issue, is Tnan Hossam, the Rav Chanina Skana Kohanim was also made on a machat, a macha that was found inside of the bosar of a korban after shrita, and he said, you should know that the knife that you used to cut to butcher this bosar, and even the hands of the kohen who was involved in cutting the bosar and so on, they are definitely tahor. But the bosar itself is tameh because it touched the machat, and somehow or other that machat was metameh. Now, this is really weird because none of this makes sense until we figure out why in the world we're assuming that the machat was tameh, and then to decide what the level of tumah was on the machat, because, I mean, look, if the machat was an avat tumah, it should have been metameh the kohen as well, the whole goof of the kohen. Forget about the yadayim of the kohen, and certainly it would have been metameh the sakin as well, because an avat tumah could be metameh a kli. So this is like a very, very opaque limud that Rabbi Hanina is being made on. Omar Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva responded to Rabbi Hanina's Kanakonim. We're finally getting these two sugyas are starting to link up, right? So Rabbi Akiva said, man, oh man, you know, we are in luck that those crazy rabbis never made these big takonas to destroy our kachim. Zachinu she'ein tumas yadayim b'migdash. Whew. I mean, it's clear from here that there was no gezera in the Migdash of Tuma of Stam Yadayim. Thank God, even though Shlomo HaMelech had been mitaken that the Yadayim can become Tmeas, but that wasn't Stam Yadayim, because otherwise this would have been a mess, because then Kol Shekein, we would have had to worry wherever Tuma was brought up, that at least the Yadayim of the Kohen would have been Tmeim, and then who knows what else would have happened. Wait a minute. How come Rabbi Akiva didn't say, oh, whoo, boy, are we in luck that ain't too much to die in Vikalim the Mikdash? I mean, why didn't Rabbi Hanina mention the fact that, Rabbi Akiva mentioned the fact that, look, he said even the knife is considered to be Tameh. So, I mean, didn't we have a Gezerah that Mashkin can be Metameh, even if there's a Rishon, they cannot be Metameh the knife? I mean, because we're assuming that there's Mashkin over here as well. Because if not, obviously, I mean, how would the knife become tameh? Of course, we haven't decided what the machat was, so we really don't know. But, I mean, but Pashas Rabbi Hanina told us that the knife is tahor to tell me that there's no din of tumas kelim midrabanan, no matter what the situation was in the Beis HaMikdash. How come Rabbi Akiva didn't say that? That's because there was no din of tumas kelim at all at that time, because the gezerah hadn't been made. So how's he going to say it? The Gezerah of Stam Yadayim was made before the Gezerah of Mashkin being Metame Kalim. And since this whole discussion was talking about prior to the Takona of Mashkin being Metame Kalim, there was no way that you could say, oh, thank God they were in Metame Kalim. They were in Metame Kalim even for Kulin. Omar Rav, what are you talking about? You're ignoring the historical reality. The Gemara said Beferish, we had back in Shabbos, that Hatarvayu Bo Bayom Gazru, both of these took place on exactly the same day. And that was the whole story about Shammai and Hillel went up to visit Hananiah Ben Gurion in his famous Aliyah. And over there we had the Yud Ches Dover and all of the disasters and the Chumras that came out with the Ribui of Beit Shammai over Beit Hillel and so on. And the things that were included over there was Hatsefer, V'hayadayim, v'hatful yom, v'ha'ochlin, v'ha'kelim, sh'nitmu b'mashkin. Now, all of them were part of Yud Ches Dover. There were no two separate days of the Yud Ches Dover. What are you trying to tell me? That's simply not true. So if there was a gezerah of Yadayim, and we're making a comment, whew, thank God they left the Beis HaMikdash out of that, then we should have said, whew, thank God they left the Beis HaMikdash out of the problem of the kelim that are being cobbled to him from mashkin. So there's got to be another reason Rabbi Akiva didn't say it, right? Says Rava, yeah. There's another reason. Forget about the sakin, okay? The sakin's not an issue. Because even if the sakin had been chulin, had it not had been kodesh, in any way it wouldn't have become tumah. No way. Because what do you think the tumah level on the sakin is, right? Hai sakin denaga b'mai. If the sakin was only supposed to be makabel tuma because it was cutting the meat of the animal which was in touch with the machat, an ochel cannot be metame a kli anywhere. So obviously the knife is not going to be tame. So it's got to be talking about what? That the knife touched the actual needle itself. So what? A kli which was mekabel tumah from something else cannot be metame another kli because it's only a rishon. So that would have meant that the machat was a rishon betumah. So how could it be metame the knife? In which case, even if it was chulin, there was no way for it to metame. So he's not going to say, oh, wow, yippee-yay, there was no din of tumas mashkin for kelim. Maybe there were no mashkin, right? In other words, well, you're assuming that there were mashkin. Who's to say that there were mashkin? So basically, you're just telling me, look, you don't have to worry about that because kelim are not mekabel tumah. Okay, can you tell me, please? I mean, now that's a very interesting point, but I have no idea where the heck did this machat come from that we're considering even the possibility of it's being metame. There's got to be some point to what he's saying. If you just found a machat, I mean, so what happened was obviously this animal had swallowed something, and now when we cut it open, we find this machat. All right, so, I mean, how did it get here? What kind of machat is it? I mean, if you're telling me that it's basically, the whole thing is a suffix, right? And we have no idea whether it was tame or it wasn't tame. I mean, don't we also have a halacha that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Chanina were melamed two dinim? We don't remember who said what, but one of them said that even though we generally do have a halacha about suffek rokin, so normally we're worried about the fact that in case someone who was tame had spit, and he was tame with either zivas or so one of the tumas that would be metame body fluids, which includes saliva, and you find this on the ground, they did not make a takana that any suffik rokin in Yerushalayim would be tame. Because when it comes to Yerushalayim, people generally were very careful not to do things that would cause tumah, so they didn't make the gezerah. And another one said they didn't make a gezerah on suffek kalim. So if you just find things on the ground and you're not in Yerushalayim, there's a takana that we consider it to be tumah, minarabana, because we can assume that it was tumah. Masha'inkem, when it comes to Yerushalayim, there would be no tumah on suffek kalim. Why would there be tumah in Yerushalayim? So explain to me, where did this needle come from? If you're telling me that I'm worried about its being tame, why am I worried about its being tame? Well, says Reb Yehuda, you know how Rav understood it? Rav understood it as our knowing that there was a needle that was actually tame mace. It was a machat that had been actually touched by a guy who was an av hatuma. He had come in contact with a mace. And remember that the Dinei Charev Hareo Kechalal applies, as we learned in Kalim, applies to Kalim that touch a tummy mace and not only that touch a mace. And therefore, it was really tummy, this machat. And it would be an av hatuma. So it could have been metame the Kohen. And it could have been metame the knife. So this is, and now he lost it, and now he recognizes, oh my God, that is that needle. It's got that little boss symbol, you know. I paid a lot for that needle, and I recognize it in the basar. Now, this is a bit ridiculous, as the Gemara is going to ask later. I mean, so then why isn't the going tummy if it was a tummy maze? And why isn't the knife tummy? Fine. Well, let's let it slide for a moment and say, okay, I know that the machat is tummy. It wasn't a suffik machat. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi says, well, of course it was a suffik machat, but the reason that I can assume that this machat was not from Yerushalayim was because when the guy walked into Yerushalayim, he put a muzzle over his parah before shechting it. So then that means if it swallowed it, it must have come before it came to Yerushalayim. And because of that, we have our suffik tumah about the machat. So now I understand. Okay, so that gezerah derabanan, they only made a gezerah that the kli may be a rishon. That makes sense. All right, so it's not metame the Kohen, and he doesn't have to wash his hands. It's not metame a kli. Okay, but let's get, just by the way, I mean, you mentioned something that's very interesting. You said that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, one of them said, Lo gozer al safek harokin shebirushalayim, and one of them said, Lo gozer al safek hakelim birushalayim. I don't understand why in the world I need two amoroim to be telling me dinim that appear in Mishnayis. What the heck? Shneim, both of these dinim are tanina. Rokin tanina, we have a actual a beferish a Mishnah that says that there's no gezeir v'rokin in Yerushalayim, and kalim tanina. So I don't need somebody to teach me a Mishnah, for God's sake. Rokin tanina, it says beferish in the Mishnah in Shkalim. It says kol arukin anipzim b'Yerushalayim tahorim. Any spit that is found in Yerushalayim is assumed to be tahor unless it was in the upper shuk. The upper shuk was that basically anybody that was tameh and was needed to bring korbanos, because of Kippurim and so on, would make certain not to go into the normal places to buy things, but there was a shuk ha'elyon where they did go, and people knew that if you're tahor, stay out of the shuk ha'elyon. Fine. So unless it's found in the shuk ha'elyon, you don't have to worry about it. So why do I need somebody to teach me? I don't know who it was, Rabbi Elazar, but whoever it was, why do I need it? Ah, because he's adding. He's talking about a case where I know that we found some idiot who was a Zov, and he went walking through the regular places. Coming to tell me, was his Chazik Zov, doesn't mean that we have to worry about the Rokin. Okay, and Kalim, isn't there also a Beferisha Mishnah in Shkolim that talks about Kalim? Kol HaKalim HaNimtzaim BiYerushalayim. If you find, now they used to have special entryways to mikveh and special exits from the mikveh, because you certainly don't want people bumping into each other when you're coming out of a mikveh. When you're going into the mikveh, that would mean you have to turn around and go back into the mikveh. So they had a different entry and a different exit, of course. So anything that's found in Yerushalayim, if you find a kli on the entryway into the mikveh, then you have to drop from somebody on his way into the mikveh. Why was he bringing these glasses from IKEA into the mikveh if they hadn't been tamei? So, okay, you'll have to assume that those are tamei, but if you find them on the way out, he must have obviously dropped them when he was finished being tevel them. So then if they're on their way out, then they would be tahor, right? But this means that even if they were anywhere else, and they weren't near the mikveh, they would be tahor. So later on we'll ask about why we need to know in and out. But hadi alma taharim. So it's saying beferish in the Mishnah, kalim, unless they're found in the entry to a mikveh, in Yerushalayim are tahor. Yeah, right. But if that's what it means, can you explain to me why the Mishnah continues? Ema seifa, if it's found derech aliyah, for they're coming out of the mikveh, so then it's tahor, which has the opposite implication. If it would be found in general in Yerushalayim, it would be tameh. So how do you know which one is real? How do you know? You can't be medayik from here. Therefore, I need the Amora to teach me that the Reisha is dafka. That is something you can be medayik in. And that would mean that in general in Yerushalayim, there is no gezeira unless it's on the way down into the mikveh. And the Seifa just added that to keep it parallel with the Reisha, but that's not dafka, and therefore I certainly do need these limudim in order to know how to read the Mishnah. But can you get me back to Rav? Rav said it was a machad of a tummy mace. So then it's an avatuma, because kima damar bechalal cherav areo kechalal. So why does the Mishnah say the kohen and the knife are not a problem? If they touch the machad, they are a problem. So then, Adam v'kelim nami litame. What is Rav giving us an explanation that can't possibly be true? Om Rav Ashi, this proves something very important. It proves that the Azora is considered to be a Rishus HaRabim by definition, whether there are people present or not. That's the Kiddush. Normally, Rishus HaRabim is only when there's three people present. But the Azora, being at a place that constantly has traffic, even if it happened to be that a suffix was neilad when no one else was there, it is always considered to be Rishus HaRabim, and a suffix tumah Rishus HaRabim is Sfeiko Tahor. And that is the Kiddush. That's the whole point of the Kiddush of the Edus of Rabbi Chanina Skanakon. Wait, so are you trying to tell me that if the same thing would have happened in Rishus HaYochid, that then what? Then Sfeiko Tamei? Is that true? No. For a very simple reason. What's the mukkar of the din of Safek Tumah Rishus HaRabim versus Rishus HaYochid? Sota, right? Tameya, okay. A sota may not have much of a brain, but she sure has a brain. And therefore, the din of Safek Tumah Rishus HaRabim and Safek Tumah Rishus HaYochid applies only to sentience. Lest I heard, machatz, don't think. So there would not be any of this halacha to be learned out for a machat. It's a suffix tumah with a dovash ain bodat li sha'el. So go ahead. Ask the knife. Ask the knife. Knife, did you or did you not touch that machat? Ask the machat. Did you or did you not? No. You don't get any answer. So therefore, the whole halacha does not apply. Kol davar she'ein bo dat b'sha'el, the halacha is bein b'rshut harabim, bein b'rshut hayachid, sveiko tahor. So since it would have been anyway, so what exactly is the raya that, oh, look at this chiddush, the azora, shmamina, that the azora is considered to be rishus harabim? I don't see that at all. Oh, wait a minute over here, my dear friend. Why must we ask the knife? The knife is in the hands of Mac the knife. And therefore, it is, Mac the knife does have a brain. So you could always ask the wielder of the knife, did you or did you not touch? And therefore, it's a suffix tuma haba abi de adam. This didn't happen stam. The knife wasn't a Harry Potter knife that was just sitting around and cutting through, preparing the bosser, right? And therefore, it does have a das lishol. Always watch out for things that you don't know where they keep their brain. But in this case, we do know where it keeps its brain, in the Kohen. And since it's a suffix tuma haba abi de adam, and Rabbi Yochanan explained that a suffix tuma haba abi de adam, you can ask, therefore, it would be, and this would be true, even if it's a kli munach agabe karka, you're not wielding the knife, but you may have come in contact with the thing. That is the equivalent of a davar sheyesh bo dat lishael, and therefore I can conclude, if the azara would ever have been considered to be rishus hayachid because no one else was present, then this wouldn't have applied. And Rabbi Chanina Skana Kohanim was therefore very helpful in teaching us this wonderful halacha.